Art, ever get the feeling there's more to a painting than meets the eye? Well, that's exactly where we're headed today, diving deep into Frederick Layton's most celebrated work, Flaming June.
It's a painting that's practically launched 1,000 interpretations.
Really?
What's so interesting is how this one canvas manages to be both a visual feast and a puzzle box of symbolism.
Okay, before we unlock that puzzle box, can you paint a picture for our listeners?
Sure.
What's the first thing you see when you look at Flaming June?
Imagine a canvas bathed in this warm, almost otherworldly light. You've got a woman draped in this almost translucent orange fabric. She's asleep, completely lost in a dream, her body curled up on this chaise lounge.
It's that orange that always gets me. It's like the whole canvas is radiating heat. But there's a lot going on beneath that beautiful surface, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's start with the pose itself. It's no accident that she's positioned the way she is. Layton based it directly on Michelangelo's sculpture, Night.
Wow, so he's drawing inspiration from one of the titans of the Renaissance. Mm-hmm. That's setting the bar pretty high, even for a master like Layton.
Exactly, and it wasn't just about borrowing a beautiful form. By echoing, Michelangelo Layton elevates his own work, placing it within this grand tradition of artistic mastery.
And speaking of mastery, you mentioned Layton's meticulous process. He wasn't exactly dashing these masterpieces off on a whim, was he?
Not at all. We're talking numerous sketches just to perfect the woman's pose.
Wow.
Some with her nude, some draped.
Real.
It really highlights how important anatomical accuracy in those early studies were to his process.
It's like those sketches were his way of warming up, making sure every fold, every curve in the fabric felt real.
Hmm.
Which brings me to something that always catches my eye, that oleander branch. Such a small detail in the grand scheme of things. What's the story there?
That's where Layton's symbolism comes in and where Victorian sensibilities really shine through. Oleander is beautiful, but it's also incredibly toxic.
So it's not just there for decoration.
Exactly. There's this inherent tension in the image. On the surface, you have this serene scene of sleep, but the oleander introduces this unsettling undercurrent. Remember, Victorians were obsessed with the symbolism of flowers, and oleander often represented this blurry line between sleep and death.
Okay, now that's an added layer of intrigue I never would have caught on my own. It's like Layton is inviting us to look beyond the surface beauty and consider the fragility of life, which is interesting because for such a well-known painting, Flaming June has a past that's almost as intriguing as its symbolism. Where do we even begin with this one?
Well, imagine, if you will, it's the 1930s and Flaming June vanishes.
What?
Oof! Gone. For decades, no one knows where it is. Then in the 1960s, it resurfaces in the most unlikely of places, a house in Battersea.
Talk about a hidden treasure. You'd think someone would have noticed they had a masterpiece hanging around.
Right. But it gets even better. Before it was rediscovered, the painting actually popped up in an antique shop.
No way.
And the person who almost bought it, none other than Andrew Lloyd Webber.
No way. The Phantom of the Opera himself.
The very same. Apparently, he was quite taken with it, but his grandmother refused to lend him the money. She thought it was just Victorian junk.
Oh, the stories that painting could tell. So after his grand reappearance, it must have been snapped up by a museum for a king's ransom, right?
Not exactly. Here's where things take a turn. It went up for auction in the 1960s. Now remember, this is a time when Victorian art wasn't exactly in vogue, and get this, it failed to reach its reserve price.
Okay, you're gonna have to tell me how much was this masterpiece going for?
A mere $140.
You're kidding. That's less than a decent dinner these days. How could a Layton be valued so low?
It's a fascinating example of how taste is subjective and constantly evolving. What's in one decade can be out the next. Luckily for Flaming June, one man's trash is another man's treasure.
So who was this discerning art aficionado who saw the value in Flaming June?
That would be Luis A. Ferrer, a prominent figure in Puerto Rico. He recognized its brilliance and saw an opportunity to bring a world-class artwork to the Museo de Arte de Ponce, which he had founded.
And that's how Flaming June ended up in Puerto Rico. You couldn't make this stuff up. From lost masterpiece to the crown jewel of a museum. Speaking of jewels, with a painting this captivating, you have to wonder about the woman who inspired it. Did Layton ever reveal her identity?
That, my friend, is the million-dollar question. Layton was famously private about his models, which only adds to the allure, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. A little mystery keeps things interesting. But that doesn't mean we can't play detective. Are there any leading contenders in the case of the Flaming June Muse?
There are two names that pop up most often. Dorothy Dean and Mary Lloyd, both favored models of Layton's.
Intriguing. Let's start with Dorothy Dean. Who was she?
Dorothy was more than just a model. She was a socialite, an actress, a woman about town.
Okay.
Rumor has it she and Leighton were quite close. Some historians even believe that Flaming June captures a certain intimacy that goes beyond a typical artist-model relationship.
Juicy. All right, what about Mary Lloyd? What's her story?
Mary Lloyd came from humbler beginnings and built a very successful career as an artist's model, but she had one very strict rule. Only head and hand shots, never nude.
Hold on a second. If Mary Lloyd never posed nude, how could she be the model for Flaming June? I mean, that dress isn't exactly leaving much to the imagination.
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? It's a strong argument against her being the model, but we do know that Leighton was a master of his craft. He used those preliminary sketches we talked about as references for his final paintings. It's possible he combined Mary Lloyd's likeness with another model's physique.
So a face for the ages, perhaps, but not the figure. You know, this is exactly the kind of puzzle that makes art come alive. It's like we're piecing together clues, looking for secrets hidden within the canvas. It really is fascinating to think about the artist process and how they bring these figures to life on the canvas.
It's a collaboration across time, in a way. The artist, the model, the viewer, we all bring our own perspectives to the experience. And speaking of perspectives, there's one more layer to Flaming June I think we should uncover. It's easy to get swept up in the beauty of it all, but this painting wasn't always considered a masterpiece, was it?
That's right. We were talking earlier about changing tastes. How did the art world view Flaming June in the years after it was painted?
Well, it's important to remember the context. Flaming June was painted during the late Victorian era. While Leighton was at the peak of his career, tastes were already beginning to shift. By the mid-20th century, when the painting resurfaced, Victorian art had fallen out of favor.
So at the time of that now infamous auction, Flaming June, wasn't the prized possession we see it as today.
Exactly. It was seen as outdated, even a bit stuffy. Not exactly the kind of art you'd find in the most fashionable galleries.
It makes you wonder how many other forgotten gems are out there just waiting to be rediscovered and reappraised. But back to Flaming June, what is it about this painting that speaks to people even today, despite those shifting artistic trends?
I think it's that potent combination of beauty mystery and a touch of the unknown, the colors, the composition they draw you in. But then there are these layers of meaning, symbolism, the lost model, the journey from forgotten to celebrated. It all adds to the intrigue.
It's like the painting itself is inviting you to unlock its secrets.
Precisely. And I think that's what makes Flaming June and art in general so endlessly fascinating. It's not just about passive observation. It's about engaging with the work, letting it spark your curiosity and drawing your own conclusions.
It's about going beyond just seeing and really diving deep.
Well said. And to our listener, we hope this deep dive has given you a new appreciation for Frederick Leighton's Flaming June. The next time you encounter this work, take a moment to really look closely. What details capture your attention? What stories do you find hidden within its fiery depths?